Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is September the 6th, 1999, and in the Koinonia Fireside Room this evening is Mark Anstead's session called Queer Chat, number 99-1. Let's listen into his session.
It's like we got a nice, cozy little group here, all in one big circle, which is nice. We can go ahead and start, David, if you're listening. My name is Mark Anstatt, and I serve the village part-time as backup medic and part-time in media ministries. And I'm a registered nurse. I'm a Christian. I'm a poet. I'm a musician. I'm a vegan. And I'm also a homosexual. I almost forgot the last part.
Yay.
Each and every one of those words or terms or labels, however you look at them, each of those, none in and of themselves define the totality of who I am, yet each and every one of those speak to a part of who I am and are integral to who I am. You wouldn't understand my relationship with God if you didn't know me as a Christian, right? And in the same way, I choose to share my sexual orientation with people because you wouldn't know the totality of who I am either if you didn't know that part of who I am is informed by the archetype of queerness. And just a word about the word queer. I like the word queer because it's very inclusive. As opposed to all the other individual words that you may hear used, you may hear me use, such as gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, or all the other many words that have been used throughout time to describe people who engage in relationships with other people of the same sex. And so when I use the word queer, I use it in the most inclusive sense. All those people, not just those people that I've mentioned, but also anybody who's ever been discriminated against, made to feel weird or different or odd in any way, people who have felt left out, people who have felt forsaken. And taken in that context, I feel like there might not be a person on the face of the earth who can't identify with some aspect of the archetype of queerness. So that's why I like that word and would love for people to get more comfortable using it as an empowering idea of some of the energies that might motivate us as people and as humanity instead of using it as a label. Most of those words, gay, lesbian, bisexual, all those words are less than 100 years old, had not even been conceived of at the time that the Bible was written, and are really a phenomenon of modern culture. And, they have over the years helped us define us, but they have associated with them this whole clumping of stereotypes, you know. And if we're going to use words to define who we are, I would rather use words that can be seen as an archetype, something that's been present throughout history, something that everybody can find something in common with as an energy that's been present with us from the beginning of time, which I believe the archetype of queerness has been with us for as long as humanity has been with us. There have been people who have felt cast out and made to feel different or unwanted. And I personally identify with the archetype of queer in many ways. I feel it's that energy of queerness is the wellspring of my creative energies, which allows me to share the gifts of music and poetry. And it's also the medium through which I've rediscovered myself as a spiritual being and come back into Christianity. A lot of people still feel that those two things are mutually exclusive, being homosexual and being Christian. But yet me and so many other people who I've talked to have come back to a stronger sense of their own sexuality, not in spite, or rather a stronger sense of their spirituality, not in spite of their sexuality, but because of it, you know, and I'm one of those people. And I love to share my stories about that, and I have a whole bunch of fun stories, but this session tonight is not about me telling you what to think. It's about us sharing and dialogue and communication, and through that communication, building bridges instead of closet doors, which are far too confining. And whenever we put one person into a closet, we separate ourselves from part of humanity as well. So I think that there's great purpose to be served from everyone's perspective, whatever your viewpoint is. And I don't expect to offer a viewpoint that can be accepted by every person in this room, or certainly every person in the world. However, I would like to offer myself as a person who maybe might be able to give you a different perspective. And through sharing all of our stories here together, maybe we can get a whole bunch of different perspectives that we haven't thought of before, that will help us make sense of things that for a lot of people can be very delicate or difficult. So I'd like to start off just going around the circle and allowing everybody to share their stories. What I'd like is for each person, if they feel comfortable, to tell us who you are, where you come from. Hello to everybody who's coming in. We're just getting started. You haven't really missed anything. We're about to engage in group conversation. I was just telling everybody what I'd like to do is go around the room one by one and have everybody share with the group, if they feel comfortable, who they are, where they come from, and what brought you to this dialogue tonight. And also, please share with us if you have a personal experience with somebody who is out to you as a gay person or lesbian, transsexual, anything that could be considered queer in that aspect of human sexuality. If you have a story about that, please share it with us. And also, if there's some way in which you identify with that queerness, if there's some way that you've felt left out, pushed on the outside, ignored, not acknowledged, made to feel different. If there's any way that you identify with that aspect of the word queer, please share that with the group too. This session is being taped. My hope that is everybody will feel comfortable speaking and sharing. However, if there are people for whatever reason don't feel comfortable, please just say that you would prefer to just listen, and we will try to respect that. We will respect that. It's not group therapy, and we will not kick you out for not participating, because active listening is participating. And the only other comment that I'd like to make before I finish my far too long-winded address to you all is that I would like for this to be the beginning of communication, and I would be very tickled for people to come up and ask me further questions at any time. I'm very comfortable talking about the issues, and you don't have to agree with me to engage me in conversation, please. I hope that people would take this back down the hill on the bus, back up lake on the boat, home on an airplane, into your families, into your churches, places where these dialogues are so desperately needed. I've really discovered a new sense coming here, how many questions people have and what a great need there is for an ongoing communication about this. So that's my hopes for this, and the rest of it is up to all of us together. So I think we'll start in this direction. Feel free to share.
My name is Barbara Effenberger. I live in Seguin, Texas. When it comes to this topic or this issue, I guess, I grew up with a lot of biases and preconceived notions and so on. As I get older, I realize that a lot of the things I learned as a child and a young person are not so, that I no longer believe them. And I want to be open-minded and listen this evening and try to learn as much as I can.
Excellent. Thank you.
I'm Helen Keith, and I come from San Antonio, Texas. I have had no experiences with homosexuals. I have a lot of problems in talking to other people that want to be exclusive, and I would I go back to the Bible, and if there's some way that someone can help me to straighten out or to show me differently what the Bible says as far as it being sinful. We're all sinful. I realize that. But I do feel that we should not be exclusive.
Excellent. I just want to let you know, in case anybody's told me jotting stuff down, I'm not like taking names or anything. I'm trying to keep track of some of the questions, because there are some things that really weren't getting back to, you know, and I think this question about the Bible is one of them, and I'd like to go just keep going around the room and see if this doesn't come up in some other ways. And I do have some great ideas for you, because there's been a lot published about that, and we have stuff here in our library, some stuff in the bookstore around you. These are all books that can be purchased in our bookstore, and I have some great references from recent years of people who have done sessions here on tape that you can listen to. There's one from a couple of years ago, What the Scriptures, Homosexuality, What the Scriptures Say, and in an hour you can get, in a nutshell, the opposite debate to give another view from all those who have used. There's about six or seven different scriptural passages that people have used and said these are condemnatory of homosexuality. And while on first glance it may seem that's strongly so, that they are condemnatory of homosexuality. However, I believe if you take the time to listen to some of the other arguments that have been made, it may not seem so clear to you, and it's been a great help to me. So hopefully you will get back to this issue as we go along. I'd love to talk with you more if it doesn't get answered to your satisfaction here. But I just have one more question for you. From the aspect of inclusivity, I'm not quite sure where you're coming from. If you would just explain a little bit more about that.
Maybe I'm saying the wrong word. I mean that what I meant was that that I do not believe that they should be excluded. Not, I guess.
You do not feel that people should be excluded from the church on the basis of their sexual orientation?
Right. Or any sin that they commit. I mean, uh-huh. Whether it's overeating or over drinking, drunkenness, mm-hmm. And I know it's a serious thing in our nation today about how children are mistreated by fathers and other members in their family, and this sort of a thing. But even those people need Jesus Christ, is the way I feel. But mm-hmm. I'm still at the point where I really think it's a sin. I will admit that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, very good.
I'm Kara Brzezny from Hallettsville, Texas. And I came just to listen to what their viewpoints and what they had to say about okay. the subject.
Thanks.
I'm Myrtle Libby from Beeville, Texas. Certainly over the years I've changed viewpoints on a lot of the aspects of it, particularly related to women, because I've coached many years.
Yeah, I think that it's very easy for us to look at the Bible and see the ways that it's sexist. Those have become very clear to us, and we have a great debt to the feminist movement for pointing that out to us and raising our awareness about that. And we're also coming to a better awareness of how anti-Semitism has played in an interpretation of the scriptures and in writing of the scriptures. And my hope is that people will see the common links between those things and also homophobia because of the limited view of same-sex relationships that they had back then that were mostly characterized by rape and abuse and abuse and misuse of children, those sort of things. So that's a great, great comment. Thank you.
I'm Marnie Wagner, and I come from Walla Walla, Washington. And I think one thing you asked was any association, and I would say my first association was maybe 15 years ago, I don't know exactly, when the peer that I was teaching with came to me and said, "Mernie, Karen just propositioned me." Mm-hmm.
And how did you feel about that when you first heard about it?
Well, surprised and not surprised, as I had observed.
Yeah. All right. Thanks.
My name's Virginia from Kirkland. I didn't come here to be taped, but I don't care about that thought. One thing I wonder is this word gay, how long has that been in use? Because my first piano teacher about 60 years ago was Mrs. Gay or something.
Yes.
I mean, in these days, you know, how old?
Gay has meant happy and has been a wonderful word long before that it was used against as a slur against homosexuals, and shortly before it was picked up by homosexuals as a way of defining. Less than 100 years ago, within this century, it's been used.
Well, I was young
to describe to describe homosexuals, but it's gay as a word existed.
It's a pretty word.
Before then, yes, and in fact. So some people actually go as far as blaming homosexuals for ruining that word for them, but hopefully we can re-embrace that a little bit as a positive word in every aspect that it's used.
Yeah, I mean, it's so much shorter and easier to say.
It is easier, I don't mean to pick one word over the other. What's important really is that we not use our words to limit our understanding of other people, but to help us to define them better so that we might see the commonalities between us all and bring us closer together.
Yeah,
so it's not all that important what word you use, really.
Condemnation at all. I told Murray on the way over to live in a condo, and woman below me and mother me in the middle, grandmother, and these two young men above me, and they're the dearest neighbors that I could ever have, and the fact that they are gay, I hate that word, I hate that connotation of it, makes no difference. I mean, I have wonderful neighbors, and I have never had any feeling of animosity or whatever you want to call it. But I say it's the fact that the word is what bothers me, and that you said it.
That's all right. Is there any way that you've ever felt queer in your life?
Yeah, sure. But I don't like queer either. That's a new word. Just short and sweet.
You can use any word you feel comfortable with. How's that? The important thing is just to keep talking about it. I like to use the words just because it calls the subject to mind and to people, because it's too easy to allow it to linger out there in this invisibility where it's pretty much always been.
I like to call them Andy and Larry because that's what they are to me.
And that's great. And as I said, you know, that's a wonderful thing. However, being a person who grew up inheriting this legacy of not being able to talk about it, I've suffered greatly because of that, because people were not willing to speak the word and to let me know about what that means, and that maybe it's okay and it doesn't mean that you're going to be miserable your entire life. And, you know, I suffered from all those stereotypes because nobody ever offered a different viewpoint for me, you know? and it made it so much more difficult for me and for so many other people. So that's why I like to hear it spoken of, definitely. But, and if that makes anybody feel uncomfortable, then hopefully you'll challenge yourself to look at what it is that's causing that discomfort. You know, where is that coming from? I think that's an important thing.
Yes, Ruth.
May I speak out of turn?
Please do. Yes, if you have a specific comment about this, please do.
No, I don't have a specific comment, but may I share?
Oh, please do. We want to hear your story because this is such a great one.
Because I'm supposed to be someplace else right now. Years ago, I remember seeing in Newsweek or something like that, parents going on a gay rights parade. How could parents really support their kids when they had gay kids? It was really, to say, how could that be? You know, and I think I just needed to be taught. And it was about 6 years ago, my son came to me and said, I'm really a girl. And that was, pretty horrendous, pretty hard to take. And I have a husband who is a retired lieutenant colonel in the Army. And this says, this is not the kind of thing that you deal with. So it was something I felt I had to deal with by myself. But I realized that this was not something that was anything that was just something that was a momentary going through, I have a hard time with pronouns, his head at that time. Because it was so real. It was so real. He had to go through all the process of having all the hair removed from his chin. He had a beard. He was married, had a wonderful wife, has a master's from Columbia University in architecture. Is a very creative person that said, I am a girl, and has gone through the whole process of surgery. Now let me tell you, I was with her in Neenah, Wisconsin at the time of surgery. No one goes through that if it's not real. It's a very, very real, honest, basic thing that people are feeling one way or another. It's not something that's just psychological. It's so real. It's nothing that he would have done in order to just, be something else. No. It's very real.
Right. Yeah, thanks for sharing that. And that's very, very important for transgender people. They go through just as much emotional pain up to that point as people who identify as gay and lesbian and coming out as who they really are as people. And then, as a person who feels like they're trapped in the wrong sex body, then they also have to, then they have to face something else. Am I going to go through with this surgery and physically change who I am, So they have this whole other journey to go on. That's just their starting point,
And then being working in the process that you're changing from one to another, from one gender to another, was very horrible. Just a horrible situation for her and for him. It's very difficult. I use he historically and she in the present. So the only one, I have five children, and the only one of the kids that had real difficulty with that was my middle daughter. And then when Teresa, that's my new daughter, that makes four daughters, came to visit us, Kathy, my other daughter, said, well, at least she's pretty. Anyway, I wanted to share that before I had to leave. I have a meeting that I'm supposed to be at right now. And
Thank you very much. That's a very important story for you to share.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That's great.
And where are we up to?
And by the way, I have lots of lesbian and homosexual friends, by the way. Our priest is a lesbian.
Wow, excellent.
In the Episcopal Church, and we love her.
Interesting. Love to talk to you more about that, too. Thanks.
My name is Virginia, and I have a lesbian daughter. I've known she was lesbian probably before she did. So it was never a great surprise, but it was never an easy thing to deal with. Until a point, she's in her 30s now. I can't remember how old, but anyway, she's in her 30s. And sometime, I think, probably in her early 20s, I grew up in a very ultra-conservative Baptist church in which homosexuality was absolutely a sin. I left that church when I was when I was 20 years old and never looked back, but not because of that, but just simply because it did not fit me. But that was still my orientation in terms of this issue. Because I never had to deal with it, basically. I never had to look at it until my daughter. I would say I've moved tremendously from that place, but I'm also not, I hate the word opened and closed, but I guess because that's the way people in my church and other places describe whether you are for it or against it. I'm not as open as some people, but I also don't think I'm closed. I have close friends who are homosexual, and I have had for years. I've had at least two good friends who came out to me, and one very recently and one many years ago. But in my daughter's early 20s, I realized that regardless of my own feelings about it, they probably were coming from some very old childhood tapes. And I realized that my daughter wanted so desperately to please me that she was not a Christian because she wanted to please me. Well, she wanted, because I said she couldn't be if she was homosexual. And when I realized that, I thought, wait a minute, you know, this can't be. I can't dictate whether another person is a Christian or not. So I moved myself away from that just simply by saying, who put me up is God, who said I was the great theologian of the world who can solve this issue. And I can't solve it. I don't know the answers to it. And I went to my daughter and told her that, and our relationship has been really good ever since that point. And I've been at peace with it, basically. And with everybody else I know who is gay or queer or whatever. Even though I myself don't entirely embrace it as, I don't know, right, okay, whatever, I don't know, but it's okay with me if people are. And I don't feel like it has anything to do with their, whether or not they can be Christians.
Great, thanks.
I'm Pat from Tacoma. I think any of us that are over a certain age have grown up, and if we grew up in the church, have grown up with those tapes in our head. And I'm here tonight because my church, I'm Presbyterian, and our church is our greater church, but my own local church is going through a struggle and maybe a split because one of the leaders of our church and a very good friend of mine, after 30-some years of marriage, came out. He's gay. And it was a shock to the church. He came out first to some of us that were close personal friends. Then he came to the session, he and his wife. Then he came, and his wife, along with the session, came out to the congregation. And this has caused our pastor has been extremely encouraging, supportive, the session for the most part has, but the congregation hasn't. There are those who definitely think the scriptures point out that this is a sin. And so we have now hired a conflict manager and are trying to work this through. And what we're trying to do is get together on what we are united in and realize that this is never going to be solved, probably. I mean, we're never, with some of these people, going to come to the same point. It's just not going to happen. It's hard to change theology. It's hard to change those tapes.
What would be a satisfactory resolution in your mind?
I think it would be that we are all on a journey together. We're all serving Christ. And let's do that. Yeah. Let's get together on what we're united on and agree that we cannot, and agree that we are disagreeing on, if we can do that.
Yeah, it's very interesting for me to hear that viewpoint. You know, I often hear many more stories of the other way around, of people feeling that they can't be part of a church because they're gay, and what they're hearing from the minister and from the other people in the church is that they can't be Christian. That's not compatible with Christianity, you know. And so it's really interesting to see it also happen the other way around, for the pastor to come out and say, "This is who I am," in the congregation.
Well, the pastor, it wasn't the pastor. The pastor is supportive. I mean, he's been very supportive. It's a couple that were leaders in the church, or they still are leaders in the church. They're still in the church, but they're also working with a gay and lesbian church in the Seattle-Tacoma area. By the way, I have a pamphlet that was distributed by Peggy Campolo, and it's a cloth of verses. It's answer to the verses that gays and lesbians have been clobbered with.
Yeah,
it's an answer to those clobbers.
Great. Is that a pamphlet, you said? Mm-hmm. Who is that?
Peggy Campolo, I don't know if you've heard of her, but she is very much for the rights of gays and lesbians, and it's a pamphlet that she passed out at a workshop in Tacoma.
Yeah. Keeping the conversation going, keeping people talking about it is the best advice, I think, to be given in a situation like that. You know, it's interesting, you know, it's like since gay and lesbian people have been trying to bring these conversations out into the open in their churches, there's been a lot of resistance, and especially in the church hierarchies in almost every religion, have been very resistant to talking about this. And the result has been that gays and lesbians have fled the church historically in droves and fled from Christianity because of that. Yet it's interesting how that was acceptable to the church, yet it's not acceptable to the churches that some people who feel very condemnatory about homosexuality, who can't reconcile that with Christianity in their mind, may feel the need to leave their congregations when they start to open up, you know. Congregations that have opened up and have made public statements about being inclusive of gays and lesbians over a period of time, most of those congregations have shown great increases in the amount of people that they have coming to them, and in the amount of money they have coming into them. You know, so a lot of those fears are very unfounded. It's just letting go of what is, you know, and being able to accept that there are some people whose minds that we are just never going to change on one side of the fence or the other. But thank you very much for your story, and I'd love to see your pamphlet.
Okay.
And wish you more good luck in your dialogue there.
I'm Connie Martin, but if you don't mind, I'd like to let him talk first, and then I'll talk.
Okay.
Well, Lanny is my name, and Mark, I love the way you introduced yourself at the beginning. You mentioned a lot of things about yourself, and then at the end, you said, "I'm also homosexual." I happen to have two daughters who are lesbians, and totally incredible human beings. And my oldest daughter, when she came out to me and her mother, And she came out to us because she said, I love you guys and I want you to know really who I am. And this is an important part of my life. And it's one part of her life. She is a college professor and it's just the world's a better place because of her. I have another daughter who is also a lesbian. She is very out. She produced the Pacific Northwest Women's Music Jamboree at Western for years. She produces the stage of the March on Washington. She produces a number of women artists. And in the process, I have come to know many gay and lesbian people, but I also knew quite a few before my daughters told me. I talked with some. And when people say, I don't know any, I haven't had contact, that's because people haven't told them. I mean, there are a lot of gay and lesbian people around. The woman I was married to for 36 years died of breast cancer. And shortly after she died, not too long after she died, I met this lady here who had lost a husband after 32 years of marriage to cancer. And my daughter, who's a college professor, found out that I had met Connie. And Connie, I went down to see her, and she took Connie and me for a walk. She said, Dad, she said, I want you and Connie to know that this is R-E-A-L-L-Y-F-A-S-T. And really fast. She was really concerned about me. And so over the course of a little bit of time, she wasn't, I think she was concerned about rebound, but she was not real supportive. And so I came back to her and I said, listen, Terry, I didn't choose for you to be homosexual, to be a lesbian. And she looked at me and she said, Dad, I didn't choose it either. And we had a good talk about that, and I've done a lot of reflecting about that. And the reflecting I've done is that the people I know who are gay and lesbian, many of them have gone through all kinds of hard times in their lives. They've been discriminated against. Some of them were school teachers, cannot be out, depending on the area where they're at because they're concerned about their jobs. There are a lot of people that think that that sexual perverts or pedophilia and homosexuality are the same thing. It's a lot of ignorance about the whole field. And so it's been a real interesting interesting thing for me. The idea that people choose a lifestyle where you're going to maybe not get the house that you want to rent, where you might have job discrimination come up against you, where people at churches of all places might say that you can't come into the church, the house of God, because of your sexual orientation is the most ignorant thing I've ever heard. Excuse me, this is, I get kind of emotional about that. But it's a real interesting dynamic because a lot of people seem to think that I choose to be queer. And hey, that means I'm going to take on all these burdens because I just like, I'm a masochist. I like to hurt myself. Well, to me, that's ignorance. And so it's an interesting dynamic. But anyway, I'm very proud of my daughters. They brighten up my life. And but I got to admit, it was a little shock at first. I mean, it wasn't what I would have chosen for them, you know? They didn't ask me, you know? So anyway, that's my story. And this lady here, she's been incredible, you know, a support. And we've had several issues come up in our church and where we've had the opportunity to share some ideas and also provide some information to people who don't have the information. A lot of people are dealing from a lack of information. And so that's kind of where we're at.
Excellent. Good. Good. We know who to come back to if we're looking for ways to bring up those issues. Thanks. What's your story? That was fantastic.
Well, we have been married for 7 years, and it's been an interesting journey for me because I've been a lifetime member of the Lutheran Church, but I have had wonderful pastoring. Alex Schmidt, who was here last night, was my pastor for 14 years. And that is a real gift to me, especially when I didn't know that God had in store for me two very wonderful daughters that have come into my life and are such a part of my life now. And they are a gift because I had not, and as far as I knew, knowingly knew any gay or lesbian people. I now know I do, and have for a long time, that these two daughters are out. They're loving and they're caring, and we have asked them in church situations where we have had some experience in our church, if we can tell about them, and they're very open to us doing that. And they've been a gift in my life.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Thanks.
Oh, first of all, I'm a child of God. My name is Roxanne Leonard. I come from Kennewick, Washington. And I'm basically here for more information. I've never had one feeling either way or the other. I've always, in a way, kind of wondered why anybody needed to know anybody else's sexual orientation.
I bet there's a few voices in here that you could speak to why that's important.
But other than that, I'm just here for information.
Wonderful, thanks. Tell me if you don't get enough information out of the session. We'll talk in person.
I'm getting a lot.
Thanks.
My name is Sue Boyle. I come from Green Bay, Wisconsin. And I've always felt that, well, first of all, I have a hard time with the word queer. I just can't say that because I think we're all queer in certain ways.
Yeah, exactly. I had a kind of hard time with
it. Like this gentleman here, I can't imagine why anybody, I believe that God gives us our sexual orientation, and I can't imagine why anybody would choose it for themselves. And I've always wondered why it was such an issue if God made us this way.
That's the way I feel, but there's a lot of people who would disagree with that. Mm-hmm. And we need to hear those voices too, because they're part of who we are. Thanks.
My name is Gloria, from Wisconsin. Our daughter introduced us to her friends when she was a teenager, and they were part of the gay and lesbian community, and it wasn't a particular shock or anything. It was really a blessing to me, because I got to know them as people, and that's, I guess, the attitude I've had since then. Sometimes I wonder what all the discussion is about. And I think we're spending a lot of energy discussing this when, let's just go on and treat each other as people and human beings. And I know that's very simplistic, and I'm sure that when you are personally involved, it isn't that simple. I certainly respect that also. But as far as the issue in our church community, which obviously there is a lot of opposition to, especially now, we voted again put it on the shelf, not to ordain gay lesbian people, which upsets me. But anyway, I don't know what the bottom of the line all that says, but
I think
several, and they're we're humans, we're God's creation.
Yeah, I think you bring up a point that a lot of people feel, what's, why can't we move on from this, and I think it is important for each of us to question what is preventing us from moving on together. A lot of people on both sides of the fence would not like to hear any more about this, but yet there's still this issue of justice and inequity that still is there in many people's minds.
Right, and I respect that, and I understand that. And if we don't speak loudly about them, then nothing will change. So,
historically, that's been the case, human beings. Thanks.
I'm Harvey, and also come from Green Bay. And I'm a pastor, and so for many years, 25 years ago or so, we had a family in the congregation in your situation, and it was very interesting to minister to them and agonize with them through that whole process. And their daughter was married and left her husband and children, developed a different lifestyle, and for mom and dad that was traumatic. And as a pastor, how do you deal with that? And also, we've had folks in the home because of our daughter, but we've also had people in the congregation. And I don't think I've always done, I'd like somebody to be able to sit there and hear my preaching and to be able to say, when you said that, this is how I felt. And I don't think that, I mean, I need that kind of help, but what happens is when people feel uncomfortable, they often move away rather than be confrontative, and that doesn't help me to change the way I really, be able to speak the way I feel. And so I don't know if I've been a real good pastor to a few of the people in our congregation who were gay, and I knew they were. And so I guess I'm here to try to hear a lot of, I haven't heard anything new yet tonight. I mean, I've been in enough of these sessions, and I've heard all of this, but like you said, how do we move from here to the next level of better acceptance? And
And I'd just like to reflect for a moment on what somebody else talked about, a couple other people talked about, which has made having people actively a part of their life that they know to be gay and lesbian, and how that's really transformed their vision of that. And that is what has been shown in many studies to be the key factor in somebody's opinion about that. Do they have somebody known to them in their life who's gay and lesbian? And I say known to them because I would venture to guess that every single person in this room knows somebody who is gay and lesbian, but may not necessarily be out to them. And I would challenge anybody who feels that they don't know anyone who is gay and lesbian to really ask themselves, you know, am I doing something? Am I leading my life in some way? Speaking to people in some way? Am I representing some system of values in some way that is preventing those people from feeling comfortable with talking about that with me? And you know, just reflecting on what other people have said about knowing people in their lives, you know, if you know there are people in your congregation who are gay and lesbian, you know, and you want to know what it means to them, the experience of being Christian and being a gay or lesbian person, you know, you got to form a relationship with those people and engage on an ongoing conversation and communication with them so that they feel comfortable. To me, really the key deciding factor that makes me feel comfortable approaching somebody is just hearing them say the words, you know, in any aspect, you know. But I'm in a little different place than a lot of people are, still coming from a big place of fear, understandably, because there's a lot of fear out there, and some people really need to be welcomed to engage in that conversation with you, to be able to honestly let you know how they're feeling about what you're saying. But hopefully some other people will touch on that as we go around the room. So.
Thank you.
I'm Matilda Kruzlak from St. Clairsville, Ohio. I have a different angle than what's been brought up here tonight. In my lifetime, I have known two male friends who had hemophilia and had lived a very full life, married and had children, and received tainted blood, and have since passed away. And I think because of that experience, I wonder why have we this situation on earth to cause this to happen?
Why do you think that is?
Well, would we have had that tainted blood if we hadn't had the homosexuality?
Yeah. I don't know. And probably nobody does.
I don't have any answers for it. I mean, was brought out in one of the other sessions. We go away with more questions and we receive answers from, you know, from sessions. I've also worked with homosexuals who I had a lot of respect for. Were very intelligent and had their right for their place on earth. But I still have always had in the back of my mind the two men that I know who died early in life because of what we read in the newspapers. I don't know that it was brought on because of that. But that, I mean, I just thought it was another angle on what we're discussing here tonight.
Yeah. In fact, you know, The amazing thing is really that we got this far around the room before the subject of AIDS came up, really, and had this conversation taken place even 5 years ago, I bet we wouldn't have got past right here about it, you know, thanks to advances in treatments, thank God. But it's important to be reminded that it's still out there, and there are still this huge stigma that gay and lesbian people have to carry on their backs yet because of this life and death disease.
Was this disease out there before it came out in the open? Or like I said, we don't know.
It became known to us the way that it is considered today in 1979. It didn't suddenly appear on the face of the earth in 79. Where it came from is the cause of great speculation and concern. You know, so I wouldn't purport to be able to answer that question for anybody, but I can only view it as a worldwide tragedy and worldwide pandemic that affects each and every one of us in some way. Thank you.
I'm Nancy Shaver from Shadyside, Ohio, and I guess my concern is that I recently found out a member of my family is homosexual, and he's a doctor, very highly intelligent man, and I guess I'm trying to find some better understanding.
Great. I hope that you get some of that.
We love him very much.
Yeah. Yeah, and what could be more important than loving someone? That's excellent. Thank you.
I'm Diane from Iowa, and I'm just here to do what we're doing here, to get some other ideas, and grew up very naively, and am happy to be able to be a lot more open about discussing it, and am quite aware of some family members. A cousin that I highly respect. I feel badly that he's not been felt comfortable in two different ways with him. I felt badly that he hasn't felt comfortable enough sharing it. And so your comment about what is it about your lifestyle and what is it about, that's really hit home with me. It's like, oh, how come he, because but then the other side of it is I've respected that he's known that possibly talking about it a lot within the context of our greater family, because I have that Baptist background in our family too, that might have caused more waves. I mean, it's been a really good balance, but I felt badly that he hasn't felt comfortable with at least some of us to talk with us about it. Because I appreciate his partner. I worried about both of their health, not only with the AIDS issue, but one of them's had some heart problems and stuff like that, and I've thought about what's that dynamic then with that relationship. So I guess the question I'd have too is, is it all right for me to ask him? And I know that's my own personal thing with him as my cousin, but you know.
This is something that I've heard brought up by other people in other sessions in the past too, and there's a whole bunch going on. First of all, I just want to make it clear to people that I'm not suggesting that the blame should be placed on any one person for if there's somebody in your life who for whatever reason doesn't feel comfortable coming out to you. I just merely suggest it as a way of opening your consciousness, you know, because what you're inheriting is the mass collective consciousness of everyone that says, be quiet about it, we don't want to hear about it, you know? But you can only start from your own perspective. You know, is there something that I can do to be more open? There's a danger in just asking and approaching somebody, because if they're not at the place where they feel comfortable talking to you about it, they may say no, they may lie, they may deny it, and that may prevent them in the future from ever, because they know they already said no to you, and they may never feel comfortable going back and saying, remember I said that? Well, it wasn't true, you know? So it's a very difficult situation, and it really can only be handled on a one-on-one situation. You know, I think that you need to look at how open are they in general in their lives with their sexual orientation, you know? And do they just need an invitation to be open with you about it, you know? A great thing to do is to talk about it as a third subject, you know?
you know, find some way to introduce the topic of same-sex orientation, of gay, lesbian. Sometimes all you need to do is just to say the word. Nobody will just even say the word, you know? Sometimes that's all that's needed. And they'll go, oh, she thinks about those kind of things. Maybe it's okay that we talk about it with her, you know? And that's about the best that I can do, you know, besides being a little birdie and whispering in their ear for you. But maybe some other people will have some suggestions too as we go on. Thanks.
Ta-da. David Moore, I'm a gay male. And I find that I have been in the closet, out of the closet most of my life, and find that I'm much more at ease talking here than I am in the outside world, basically because there's not the opportunity to. One gets tied up with one's life. So I find it very, very exquisitely delightful to be here and talking about how people of God and of the church are opening up and are becoming available to their family and members and bishops and whoever else needs to be making these kinds of decisions of opening up the consciousness. So it's a global, healthy kind of moving on. And I've felt as if being a musician, a violinist, has helped me to go beyond one's sexuality. Many times in concert, I will look out and see others in the audience, barely, but I can see the aura, the people for who they are in their souls, and know that I am helping. I would hope us all to get beyond our limitations of how we look at and feel about stigmas based on ancient or mean-spirited or power-driven money-based stuff that doesn't help us to move on and love each other and help each other to survive as well as we can. Looking at how other countries have opened up, it's United States, I think, has a lot to learn from Scandinavia, France, and many other civilizations that come before us. And so I'm open to discuss more of my story, but it would take us probably a good chunk of time.
Thanks. Wow. Great. And I think we're back there. If you'd like to share some, I'm not sure when you came in, but we're just sharing who we are, what brought us here. If you know, if you have a relationship with anyone known to you as homosexual, transgendered, anything falling under the umbrella term queer, please share that with us.
I'm Dick Stewart, and I have several friends and family members who are gay. And I'm here mainly just for conversation, interaction. But one thing I've been thinking about recently that I've noticed that seems to be somewhat encouraging is how much it's interesting how much of a cultural and generational thing this seems to be. I mean, there's certainly, it crosses generations when people are touched by homosexuality close to them, they seem to be able to come to accept it. But for the most part, you know, like we were saying earlier, people that were brought up feeling that this was evil or sinful to hold to that pretty dearly. Whereas there are at least some segments, some cultures of my generation and younger generations where it seems to be a pretty painless shift and are, you know, thoroughly, you know, really unconcerned about it as a whole. And it's definitely, I was tempted at first to think, well, yeah, my generation, but I've noticed too, it depends so much culturally too when I travel to different places, like definitely in big cities, you know, among young professionals, it seems to be much less of an issue than going to a small town in the Midwest where it's just, you can't talk about it, you know, and it's totally unacceptable. So I think that's interesting.
Yeah, it's a great
hope. And hopefully that's good hope for more widespread acceptance, just in terms of like people I've seen as they've moved from like a small town to a big town, how quickly they've come to change their viewpoints that, you know, society as a whole can do that.
Yeah, I hope so. Hi.
Hi, I'm Dean Stewart, and I'm hopelessly heterosexual. Also, I'm a pastor, and I've also gone through a good deal of learning about dealing with sexual orientation, having very close friends, having a son who's gay, being extremely impressed by their ability to maintain relationships with me when I've been less than sensitive over long periods of time. And I guess I've come to believe a lot of things, and I'm not going to take a long time, but I just mostly feel that the world is much more at risk from, I guess, testosterone-bloated heterosexual male than they are by...
Yeah.
What he said. Because we all
suffer from that. Because... You know, heterosexual males suffer from having to live up to that. Mm-hmm. Right. And who can live up to that? Thanks.
I'm Gretchen Stewart, and I came mostly to listen. I thought the subtitle of your talk was interesting, something about the life and experience. What was it?
I spent a lot of time contemplating the title because I follow a long line of people before me who have done similar, who have held similar discussions here, you know, and I wanted mine to be uniquely reflective of where I'm coming from as a queer person, you know. And I really, you know, one of the things I want to get away from is labeling, so that's why I liked using something that can be viewed as an archetype, and that's why I chose the word queer. And another one of my things is everybody's titles seem to have the word issue. Come talk about the issues of gay and lesbians. And I don't have an issue, I have a life. You know? So I want to talk about my issues. I want to talk about my life and my experience in life and my experience in Christianity. And so
I kind of wanted to hear from a few queer people, queers, whatever.
Right.
Their experience. That's why I came. And I also have had marvelous experience and relationships with family members.